I'm sure the upper management didn't know about this going on, right?
Yuck.
They were oblivious, right? I mean, most of them are. So can't we say that in this case?
No, there are records to prove that that would be an incorrect assumption, Mr. Sims.
And there we go, assuming.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin Compliance. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, David.
Woo, that coffee kicked me in.
Just trying to be positive. Just trying to be positive.
You are. You are the positive to my negative.
Oh, God. I don't know if I want to go any further with that.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. So today we are going to dive into some whistleblower settlements and talk about some data integrity. And one of the things that we used to harp on a lot, we really hadn't talked about in a while, which is, when people used to tell us that their EHR vendor is handling their HIPAA compliance. It's like nails on a chalkboard to us. But, you know, even though we've been saying that that's kind of crazy and we give examples of what they're not doing, we've really not had a lot of ways that we could point to something that's like, okay, here's the real reason why you shouldn't, you know, lean on that, because it'll blow up in your face. But now we have something to point at.
It did blow up in your face.
Yep. It did. So we'll get into that and what happened and how it may apply to some people who are listening. But before we do that, where can people find you throughout the country, Waldo?
Waldo. In July, by the time this airs, I will have already been down to Valdosta on my gig. And then in July 19th, the Atlanta Association of Legal Administrators. That one's, I'm getting some cool emails on that one. It's going to be fun. And we're still working out our dates for our August HIPAA boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gotten several people saying, let me know the dates, let me know the dates. So we better get that done this week, David.
All right.
Yeah. I'm sure it's your fault that it's not
done. Whatever, I'll take it.
All right. And then in September, Mr. Sims will be at the Unconvention.
Yes, September the 16th and 17th.
And yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
In D.C.
D.C.
D.C. And then in October, North Metro MGMA in Kennesaw, I will be there. And November is Georgia Association of Orthopedic Executives. So come on out and meet us if you're in the organizations or, you know, going to be in that area. Wander around, find us, and come in and say, hey, how you doing?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Pull on up to the bar. Let's have a talk.
Listen, tell me what you think. So there you have it.
Very good. All right. So we're going to dive right into today's topic.
Let's dive.
No head first diving. Yeah, that's bad for you.
Yeah, especially in 5 feet of water.
Yeah. So if you're wondering who we're talking about, when we talked about the opener, how people say that their EHR vendor is doing their HIPAA compliance. I mean, I think we've had a podcast where we talked about that a little bit, about there's a lot of things that there's no possible way they can be doing for you. So to say your EHR vendor is handling your HIPAA compliance, or to say your IT vendor is handling your HIPAA compliance, or any vendor for that matter, you know, we do see that a lot, where it's like, we do your, you know, we handle your HIPAA compliance for you. And I'm like, no, there's no panacea out there.
HIPAA made easy.
There's no vendor that's handling all of your HIPAA compliance. Sure, they can handle portions of it. They can assist you with it and stuff like that, but you can't just outsource 100% of it. It's not going to happen. So,
well, it's not going to happen effectively anyway.
Yeah, you're right. But there are people who think that's what they're getting, and unfortunately, there are people out there who are selling that.
And there's people out there who say, "I'm just not going to do it." So, you know.
Yes, I know those.
Okay, so.
But there was a recent whistleblower lawsuit settlement between eClinical Works for a whopping $155 million.
Yeah, bam.
No kidding.
And you know, in a lot of ways, I was reading this, and it's huge news in so many ways, and it's kind of flying under the radar because it's only certain people are seeing how huge it is. But from a HIPAA perspective, as I was reading it, I'm like, there's major data integrity issues here, and no one's actually addressed that. So I don't really know if that's going to be pursued or not. But what's important is everybody needs to understand that assume is a problem for everybody.
Yeah, and we get that a lot. You know, I don't know about you, but I've heard a lot of times too when you're talking about vendors, somebody will say, well, you know, they're the number one vendor in the market, or they're the number three vendor in the market. So, you know, they got their stuff together and they don't even want to even talk about trying to do any type of, you know, verification of anything.
Yeah. I don't have to look, you know, and I remember years ago when I set up an active interface so that they really, it's all automated. But if it had a problem, it would start kicking out this thing because it all ran in the background. There was nothing, you know, that was happening in front of people, but it would throw out, it kicked a report out to somebody, one team, and it sent messages to another team. And this had been going on for a while, and we learned that it was telling people stuff when all of a sudden data wasn't flowing on this connection. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's, of course, yelling at us because data's not flowing. And we go look, and it was like, you know, for like 4 weeks, all of your people have been getting messages, and they just didn't read them. They just threw them away, said it didn't make sense to them. They didn't know what it meant. Well, maybe you should call somebody if you don't know what it means. You know? But,
if
you know,
nobody looking, is it really happening?
Yeah. I loved it, though, when the CEO goes, well, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, at any rate, that's what we're really looking at here with this eClinical Works. And there's a lot of stuff in here that was really disturbing. And I know that it is a large vendor. It is a huge vendor in the industry, and that's what makes it even more disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
So, unreliable data created by an application, that's just, now I'm playing with patient care. And if you can't trust your data, you can't trust your system at all. That's, I mean, so we're talking about this and we're going to review what happened. And if you know this kind of stuff's going on somewhere, review it closely and get your documentation in order to show that it happens and to be able to prove that it happens. And if you're involved on the vendor side, you need to listen closely to what's going on. If you're involved on the client side, you need to listen closely to what's going on. And it doesn't matter whether you had eClinical Works or not. It really doesn't. This could have happened to most anybody, and this happened to a major vendor. So everybody put your listening ears on.
All right. Let's get into the case.
Yeah.
Open case file.
Open. So what was interesting is how much of this was done as a sealed complaint so that they could do it behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this guy named Brendan Delaney, and this case was filed in the Vermont District Court requesting a jury trial specifically, and that it was sealed so that it wouldn't be public record until it was appropriate. And this guy, it was using a thing, and what's interesting to understand here is, as a whistleblower for violations of federal law, when you know, we have in HIPAA, we have the non-retaliation policy for whistleblowing of violations of HIPAA. But when you do this and it's something like this, you're actually suing on behalf of the U.S. government for violation of federal law. And that's what Brendan Delaney did. He had worked for 4 years as a project manager consultant, multiple institutions that all implemented eClinical Works. So back 2010 to 2014, those were the early years. A lot of squirrely stuff was going on. And we're not talking little places. I mean, he worked for the state of New York at, you know, implementing EHR at the Rikers Island prison. I mean, not little places. And he worked as a consultant with Beth Israel Medical Group and Mount Sinai University Medical Practice Associates. I mean, we're not talking, you know, Dr. Smith, who's about to go, you know, retire, and he's doing his little, you know. No, it's a huge list. So there's no doubt he knows the solution very well. And along the way, as things happened, he was documenting things because he started to get concerned. And he still works in, well, at the time of the filing or recently, he was a project manager at United Health Group. So he was still around. He didn't just walk away after 2014. So he's, you know, a healthcare person like us. Well, not anymore. I'll get explain that in a minute. But the complaint that was filed said he had personal knowledge, relevant documents, and information and belief the eClinical Works made false and fraudulent records, statements, and claims in violation of the Federal False Claims Act. So they made the false claims by representing to customers that their system was meaningful use compliant, but they hid defects in the system that they knew didn't make it. And so the quote was, these hidden defects not only violate material conditions of the EHR incentive program, but they also create a significant risk to patient health and safety. Mm-hmm. Patient care comes first. Didn't matter to them. Because when some of these things, I was like, oh my gosh, as David says.
Yeah, I mean, it's significant risk, not just, it might, you know.
Yeah, it's possibly. Yeah, and it's a wonder someone hasn't died, and it's possible they may find that when you learn about all these things. So let's say where they say that the fail to reliably perform. Well, let's see. It didn't properly document and display the medications administered to patients.
Oh my gosh.
It did. Yes. See, I knew that was coming. Oh, my
right
gosh.
There. You stop right there. Like, what?
Wait, what? It didn't properly report the results of lab tests.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. I mean, come on now.
I know. What you going to do? So clearly, if it's not doing that properly, you can't trust the data about medications and lab tests when you're treating a patient. Okay.
Yeah. Where do you go from there?
Yeah. Yeah. So this guy, he started when he was doing the installs and the rollouts at Rikers Island for the state of New York. And this contract, now get this. Mm-hmm. This is why we get $155 million out of this deal in the settlement. And it could have been way, way, way more. So eClinical Works settled, acting like, oh, well, now we look pretty again. Mm-mm, sister girl, no. You still need some makeup. So eClinical Works contract that was through December 2010. So remember, he worked 2010 to 2014. Mm-hmm. Was $27,713,333.
To this one guy?
Well, no. The Rikers Island contract.
Oh, okay. I got you.
With the state of New York. Then it was supposed to be extended through 2014 for an additional $14,308,390. How much money is that, David?
That is a bunch of money. That's a couple dollars more than I carry around.
That's pocket money, right? That's pocket money.
That's a bunch of money.
So they started this rollout in 2008. Mm-hmm. And then 2010, this guy comes around. And he and the providers had started noticing that the current medication report wasn't accurate. And they start to point it out to eClinical Works. You know, hey, brother, this ain't right.
Something wrong here.
Yeah. Look, this is not the drugs I am on.
I swear I'm not pregnant.
Yeah, so, and they were like, you know, here, the whole point of not, you know, of having an EHR is to get rid of paper, and because of this, we need to keep paper because we can't trust that. So, that was in April 2010, so that's how far back this stuff goes. And so the New York City Department of Health tries to get in, or I guess New York City or New York State, they try to get involved, and they tell eClinical Works, hey, you better fix this. Mm-hmm. And eClinical Works said, we're going to do that in the next round of updates.
It's on the list.
Yeah. And so he says, the Brendan, our friend here, the whistleblower, he said, okay, well, basically, it never happened. And, he sees these problems. So he gets other jobs. He goes to all the same problems. He walks in the door. He sees a list. Same problems reported everywhere he goes. So this is not a minimal thing. And they did, eClinical Works told New York State that it was a training issue, that their users weren't using the system properly.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Yeah.
Which is
systematic of problems with the C-suite on down.
Yeah. But here's the thing is it becomes even more telling when you get into the hairy details of what they found in the investigation.
Do tell.
Yeah, I know. Ooh, juicy news. I feel like we're doing, the Kardashians here. So, so the fundamental flaws described herein, as the legal document says, exist in each version of the software and render the technology unreliable, dangerous, and non-compliant with meaningful use requirements.
Wow. Dangerous that, software.
Yeah. Unreliable, dangerous, and non-compliant. So here was the whole list, and it's a huge list once I started getting through it. I was thinking I was going to scan this document. Wouldn't that be a deal? I ended up spending a good bit of time going through it because I was like, wait, what?
Curled up on the couch, didn't you?
Oh, no way. So he had documented and kept the documentation, by the by, of multiple real-world examples of all of these problems. Every one of these problems, multiple real-world example. So he was able to document in almost every facility he worked at the same problem, and he had documentation to prove it. Hmm. So those of you out there, keep that documentation, is what I'm saying. So first of all, fails to document medication activity properly. They were listed incorrectly after you would make updates to the patient's medication and you go back in and it wouldn't be there right. Or you would have the wrong patient be displayed when you're doing progress notes. So you would see this is the wrong patient's information. And there were cases where physicians caught it. And had they not caught it, it would have had serious, if not fatal, results with the patient.
Mm-hmm.
It did not log start and stop dates for the medication, which you're supposed to be doing stop dates automatically. If you don't enter one, it should calculate, 30-day. I'm doing a 30-day script. When would it stop? So failure to document previous medications only allows one dosage to be documented, which was really important because there's a lot of medications where I want you to take, say, one pill in the morning and two at night. Well, you had to pick one or the other. You could either say one pill at morning and night or two. You couldn't say one and two. Wouldn't let you. And then if the doctor entered, in some cases, they would enter, hey, I don't want, there's cases where the generics, some patients need the branded version. So they would say, okay, this patient, I want them to have the branded version for whatever reason. It would enter it, and the program would automatically change it to the generic on the order. Yeah, there you go. I know more than you, Mr. Doctor, or Ms. Doctor. I'm not even going to allow you to treat patients the way you want. And then they had this really cool telephone encounter system. So if the physician handled something over the phone, they could call in to the EHR and say, hey, computer, call in changes to this medication and, reorder or whatever. Mm-hmm. If they did that, it didn't show up on the chart at all. And, if you saw the patient twice in the same day, which you might do if, you call the patient calls in, they've got a serious problem. You go ahead and order some scripts and you say, I'm going to need to see you later today. I have an appointment later today. Mm-hmm. It couldn't handle those two. So if you did the telephone order, part of that detail would get in there, but then it would slam it all together and it wouldn't know which one was which. So you didn't know whether this happened in the discussion from the telephone order or it happened in a real thing, and it would overwrite stuff based on what the timing was. And here was the key. A lot of these problems not only failed meaningful use requirements, but also the Medicare e-prescribing incentive program. So I'm selling software that people are getting meaningful use payments for that doesn't meet meaningful use requirements that they are attesting that it does. Mm-hmm. And because the vendor says, yeah, it does meet it, you're doing it wrong. And it also doesn't meet the Medicare e-prescribing incentive program. So those providers who are using their e-prescribing, that means that they're getting payments through that incentive program also mm-hmm. incorrectly. So that's like over $100,000 there. And, you know, it just kept adding up because now it fails to reliably record and track laboratory results properly. And they found at Rikers Island 1,884 lab reports that never made it into the medical records.
Wow.
They had arrived.
That's just one location.
Yeah. They you know, it never made it in. And they don't know. And another client, when he went to another client, because he had learned about the problem, and he goes to another client, and they're talking about problems with the lab. So he goes and checks, and it had tens of thousands of lab reports in a pending state.
Wow.
Not attached to any patient. They're just hanging out. And, you know, there's no alerts anywhere. There's nobody telling anybody anything. Inadequate protections to retain a record of prescriptions. So overprescription and underprescription could occur on purpose and by accident.
Okay.
Yeah. There were not sufficient, and here you go, security protections, hello, to ensure that a record of prescriptions is maintained within the system. Prescriptions can be printed without being logged.
Wow.
And can be deleted permanently after you log them. You can still take them out. So basically, you could go in and create a script and then completely remove it from the patient log and go pick up these really powerful meds.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it happened.
You know it did. It's too widespread.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somewhere is like, oh man, they're going to turn that off because I was really using it.
There goes my supplemental income. Dang.
So we've got security issues. We've got data integrity issues. How about that? Inadequate protections against over medication. You can order the same med twice.
Cool.
And that whole thing where it did the convert to generic.
Uh-huh.
So then it would let you do the branded one and the generic one on the same day. It would just leave both.
Well, I mean, you gotta have choices.
On at least one occasion, it documented a text message sent by a patient through the patient portal as though it was created by a physician.
Okay.
So basically, the system could let patients create an entry in their own medical record.
Hey, that's cool.
Yeah. They didn't have a ton of documentation on that piece, but whoa.
Yeah.
How could something from the patient portal that the patient is sending in their inbox end up looking like a doctor's note? I mean, that's a really simple, hey, you wouldn't want that to happen. That would be like at the top of the list for quality control.
You could like sign yourself out of work for a month. Here's my doctor's excuse. I'll be back next month.
There you go. Just send that on. And this one was a big problem, that thousands and thousands of open notes on the system. So you could, if they opened a note, then you could go in and update them. So now your records are getting changed.
Hmm.
So anybody could create, modify, delete. The problem is, so if a physician is in a medical record and it's not locked, then another person can enter the system and edit those same notes that the physician entered.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, it's supposed to stop human error, but it also, you know, there's some other things that could go wrong there, primarily human error. And we always talk about it's the people.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are going to close. You got to handle that. But if it automatically locked the notes when the physician closes it, then it wouldn't let anything happen. But they never did. They just left them unlocked. And it stayed that way.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, Brenda being, you know, in the field and and exposed to this. I mean, he run across this stuff all the time, but I'm sure the upper management didn't know about this going on, right?
Yuck, 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 yuck.
They were oblivious, right? I mean, most of them are. So can't we say that in this case?
No, there are records to prove that that would be an incorrect assumption, Mr. Sims.
And there we go, assuming.
It goes back to say that the corporate managers were aware of significant flaws in the system since at least 2010. It's likely earlier. They just had the documentation going back to 2010. And it, with the knowledge, they continually misrepresented their systems as having no defects.
Oh, my gosh.
And here's the thing is there's tons of upgrades over that time. You know they made them. And the supposedly, well, we're going to do that in the second one, and we're going to do... They never fixed the problems.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, just from a software side, I can't even fathom how they got this far as a company with this type of failure going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, like I told you, they said, well, it's a user problem. It's not our problem. And you, they had documentation where it was, you know, every single location this guy had worked at, and there were a significant number of them, they had reported the same problems. Because he was trying. This guy was trying to get it fixed. He was trying to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going to everybody and saying, hey, please get this done.
Right.
So the quote was, eClinical Works has a financial disincentive to fix the system because it would require updates to every module along with the core, all versions and all releases.
Mm-hmm.
So they did have a major update, and if they did that one, people would know, and then the word would get out, hey, they've got this totally screwed up because you got to list what you're fixing. So here's the thing is tons of people didn't know this was a problem because they, like you said, they're not paying attention.
What's that? Like you said that one time, but if we document it, then they'll know we're not doing it.
Well, yeah, if it does that, we're going to, it knows that I'm not doing the work. we shouldn't be talking.
Mm-hmm.
So they're worried that would show up as defective and it would be a severe competitive disadvantage.
You think?
That was their concern. So basically they're saying, all right, you know what? We lied about it and it's going to be really hard for us to fix it. So, yeah. Let's just keep lying and hope no one dies.
Hope no one dies.
And if they die, surely they won't be able to track it back to us.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, that was, you know, that was essentially the way their approach. Because there's plenty of documentation, apparently, through the entire investigation that they did, which was, you know, on the down low. They found tons of stuff. And so the official legal charges made in the complaint, you know, because you got to have the official legal stuff.
Right.
And then you get to use terms like defendant. The defendant knowingly presented or caused to be presented false or fraudulent claims to the United States government for payment or approval.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say this. For all these people that are listening and they're going, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I know plenty of people that took meaningful use money from the small providers that didn't do jack crap they said they did. So don't be pointing the finger. Yeah,
exactly. And the OIG just came out a report saying that there are hundreds of thousands of dollars that have been overpaid in meaningful use money because people attested to things that they weren't doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, you know, risk analysis and those kind of things.
I know, because I have people that used to call me and we're doing a meaningful use stage two. And I'd be like, okay, let's see your risk analysis so we can, what? Risk analysis? I'm like, wait a minute, you had to do that for stage one.
Yeah. Where's your documentation of the security features in your application and how you have it set?
Crickets.
Okay. And how much money did you get already?
Yeah, exactly.
So not only was it happening at the provider side, it was also happening at the vendor side, who was then telling the providers, hey, we got you.
Yeah, you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing it for you.
So they've got fraudulent claims to the U.S. government for payment and approval. They've got fraudulent records or statements material to the claims for payment by the government. So it's like you made them and then you had made, you know, fraudulent records and statements. So you kind of beefed it up and made it look like. So it's not just that you lied. You made it look like you weren't lying. You created things. And the United States has been damaged. They have, the defendant's acts have damaged the United States and continues to be damaged.
Mm.
Continues.
Say
in a substantial amount. Yowza. And then, though, this was interesting. The United States is entitled to the maximum penalty of up to $11,000 for each and every violation arising from the defendant's unlawful conduct alleged herein.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Yeah, I know. They just get back to a bunch of money.
It's a bunch of money.
So in their little investigation where they got all these records, they found out, and this is where it gets tricky. This is where I was like, you know what? I know what it's like when those salespeople are super eager and the marketing people are super eager and they pressure the developers to do things. And that, you know, or sometimes the developers say, hey, this is the way we can get around this problem so I don't have to solve it under the time frame you're giving me.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, it's not clear. But they concealed from the ONC that the software didn't comply with certification requirements. They knew it didn't accurately record user interactions and audit logs. So here we got another HIPAA problem. And could have problems recording diagnostic orders and medication interaction checks. They knew it didn't meet data portability requirements. And then they cheated to pass the certification test. They hard-coded. And that means they wrote the programs. And instead of going out and checking a database like it was supposed to do, they actually wrote the programs to know the answers, not to calculate them. Here's the question. Here's the answer. So they basically, you know, did a cheat sheet for the test, put it in the program. So there were 16 codes that they were supposed to be able to look up and give you a response. And they just put all of that into the programs themselves and never did the lookup. And they paid kickbacks of at least, this is all they could document. And I think they just, at that point, quit. $392,000 to, quote, influential customers to recommend eClinical Work products to customers and then gave them kickbacks in the form of, quote, consulting and speaker fees. Yeah, they would pay them then to be a consultant or a speaker. If you'll go over here, you know, we can't give you as a user, you know, these. I mean, it was like insane stuff they were doing. So they caught him doing kickbacks.
So you're in the wrong business.
I know, really? You know, I hate, you know, sometimes you look at those millions of dollars flying around and you're like, well, you just got to give up all your integrity. Feel like you need a shower all day, every day. You know, these people clearly don't care. So it's, the government says, as a result of these failings, eClinical Work system fails to comply with the core requirements of meaningful use to qualify for federal incentive money.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, give us the money.
Yeah, give it back.
You misled your clients. And you know about that, we don't want that money back.
Mm-hmm.
Stroke me a check. And that's where they got to the $155 million settlement. But here's the tricky thing. Here's the cool thing. And this is something that should have all of those vendors that did maybe, you know, cheat a tish on the test.
Mm-hmm.
They should be quaking in their boots because our friend Brendan Delaney, under the law, under the whistleblower law, now there's, you know, supposedly they're supposed to implement something like this for the HIPAA law, but it hasn't happened yet. But he gets a chunk of that money because he brought the case. He helped develop it and build it. And, you know, those vendors out there like, does anybody know where so-and-so works now? We need to pay them off. So the part of the settlement says basically they don't have to admit anything, which is, you know, okay.
Yeah, whatever.
But, it's kind of like I'm not admitting anything, but I'm basically turning over everything and saying, well, clearly I was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So eClinical Works pays, and this was interesting too. So they started the settlement negotiations February 1st, and they didn't come out until May 31st. So the $154,920,000 plus interest of 2% per year for starting on February 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So if they drug it out, you know, because a lot of people drag it out, they're going to just add interest. And that interest, they had to be able to pay up the whole amount plus interest within 10 days of May 31st. So they already paid that money. And it says jointly and severably liable for the payment are the CEO, the CMO, and the COO. So all you Swiss, C-suite folks at the vendors, EHR vendors, they start, you know, checking your list. But here's where it got even more where I was like, whoa, wait, back it up. In a separate deal, a developer, a project man, and two project managers each paid.
Oh.
Yeah, the developer had to pay a civil penalty of $50,000, and each of the project managers had to pay $15,000.
Wow, so you can't just say, well, I was just doing my job.
Clearly, yeah, there was a lot more involved. So these folks were involved, and they kept quiet about it. So hopefully eClinical Works paid them $150,000 to keep their mouth shut, so they saved some of it for their, you know, legal troubles. And, you know, of course, then you've got attorneys and all that other stuff to worry about. So that doesn't even put a dent in what the total cost of this thing is going to be. But mm-hmm. here's where it gets juicy.
Okay.
Our friend Brendan.
Yes.
I don't think he's working anymore.
He got a little bit of cha-ching.
Ching. Yeah. They made it rain for him.
I was going to ask, can he make it rain in the club?
He made it rain in the club. $30 million plus interest accrued.
Oh. Let me find out somebody's messing up. I just found my quick retirement path.
$30 million. Now, he tracked this stuff and he documented this stuff very thoroughly. And he tried multiple times to get the problem solved. And he documented all of that. So he came to the table with valuable information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they brought the suit. So it's not like you can just run up to a random federal prosecutor and say, hey, look at this one patient came out wrong. That's not it. You've got to really do this.
Yeah, it's a little
more. I'm pretty sure he didn't show up for work on the first. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. Yeah. That's a little more work than going to the convenience store getting a scratch off.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Brendan, if you listen to us, I'm your new best friend. So
trust me, you don't want run, Brendan, run.
I don't want much, you know, maybe 100 grand. That's all I need. That way I can get rid of David. So,
I figured it wouldn't take that much.
I wasn't talking about bribing you. I was talking about replacing you.
I figured you were talking about knocking me off.
Oh. No, you know, in reality, there is no way to replace you because please tell me there's not another one. So also they agreed that they were not going to chase after that Medicare, Medicaid, federal health care program monies anymore. Mm-hmm. This was going to pay off the whole big mess. Now, it did not mention any other kinds of passes that they were going to get as far as what other things, because as we mentioned, there's multiple HIPAA problems in here as well that they created.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a corporate integrity agreement with the Office of Inspector General under HHS. They have to retain an independent software quality oversight organization. They have to provide written semi-annual reports. So they're like on a corrective action plan.
Yeah.
Independent review organizations to review arrangements in the anti-kickback statute, because clearly they didn't care. They have to notify customers of safety-related issues. You know, mitigate the risk to patient safety, maintain a list of issues on its website of here are all the things that we know we're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And then for all of you people that are eClinical Works users, and I think this is really the ultimate reason that the settlement came through, Yeah, because they could have really hit them hard because basically their whole business was based on fraud. Because meaningful use money is what everybody was after, especially in that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to allow the customers to get free updates of their software. So free. They can't charge you to get your software updated to fix all these problems that they know about.
How mighty nice of them.
Yeah, I know. That's part of the deal. And they have to allow customers to transfer to another company without any penalties or service charges. So you can get out of your contract with them, and they're not supposed to charge you penalties or service charges to help you move to another vendor.
Mm-hmm.
And I even saw a vendor that was already offering the ECW rescue plan. Yeah, they had already put a package together.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So to get people to move, so eClinical works, if you're with them, don't think you're stuck. And if you're staying with them, get the updates. Because patient care is seriously a problem with this software if you don't have it all up to date.
Yeah. Yeah, very serious and dangerous.
Yeah. And then there was this little piece, which makes me wonder, eClinical Works will cooperate with additional investigations into these claims and encourage all of its people to do so also.
Uh-huh.
So what are the additional investigations?
Sounds like it might be rolling downhill.
Yeah, something else is happening, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's like, who else did they pay off that we don't know about yet?
Yeah, let's look at some of your customers, maybe.
Man, let's see what's going on. So this case, there's so much in there. You think about all the things we mentioned, there's so much in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the healthcare software, there were so many vendors that jumped in at that time. And hey, you know, everybody was pushing those deadlines to get their certification so they could sell it. And then they got paid the meaningful use money, essentially, you know, is what they were after. And they didn't worry about security. They didn't worry about any of the true reasons that you're supposed to do things. And then turn around and say, well, it's just going to be too expensive for us. Too expensive for us to fix the things that will save people's lives.
Yeah. Mm. Crazy.
Yeah. So, but we're going to have links to all this data. You can read it yourself. The advisories to customers, the different articles, the legal documents and all that kind of stuff. If you're interested in finding it, it'll all be on the website. But clearly, there are so many implications to this. Fraud and the level of concern over patient care was just not even there.
Mm-hmm.
And you need that. You need to be able to trust your vendors actually care about your patients.
Yeah.
You know, we preach that all the time. Patient care comes first.
And even if you're not using eClinical Works, no matter who you're using, when you see things that aren't right, you should certainly be bringing those things up. And if, you know, if it's something that's not right in the software and you're not seeing it getting fixed, I mean, you know, there's got to be some way you either got to have them fix that or move to something else.
Yeah,
because
if you see something wrong, don't assume you did something wrong.
Yeah, it's not always, you know, a training issue.
Clearly.
Yeah, not always. But, you know, it all falls back to the whole trust but verify. You know, I know that gets thrown around in nearly every area of life, but it really is the case when you're, especially when you're dealing with something that could cost somebody their life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of people, when they're using the computer, they don't realize that there was somebody like me on the other end actually writing the code.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they weren't like me because...
Because it would be right. Yeah.
I wouldn't cheat. So, but yeah, it's not this piece of metal or, you know, electrical pulses that is doing the work. There's some individual that created that code somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're getting to where the computers can create their own code, which is even more terrifying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, ultimately there's a human involved in the decisions that the computer's making.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe Watson. Watson says, get out of my way. So there you have it. It's very scary.
Yes. Very, very interesting, scary, whole nine yards. So definitely should give people a lot to think about. I mean, you know, look at the CIA or the PHI. You know, if the confidentiality, integrity, or availability are in any way subject to being looked at, then you should be looking at them. Absolutely. So that is our show for today, folks. Thank you for listening. If you would like to review us on iTunes or social media or share us out on social media, please do that. We do appreciate it. We work for peanuts. You can visit us on the website, helpmewithhipaa.com. If you'd like to leave us a question, you can do so right there, and we may feature it in a future episode. So remember, for Donna and myself, HIPAA is not about compliance. It is about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.